Viharan balakor bakai
Viharan balakor bakai
Ragyagam praptitam datam
Ragyagam praptitam datam
Ragyagam praptitam datam
Ragyagam praptitam datam
Shudva tatredam abravit
Shudva tatredam abravit
Shudva tatredam abravit
Shrutva tatredam abravit Tasya putro dhitejasvi Tasya putro dhitejasvi Viharan balakor bakai
Viharan balakor bakai
Rakyajam prapitam tatam
Rakyajam prapitam tatam
Shrutva tatredam abravit
Shrutva tatredam
abravit
Tasya putro dhitejasvi Tasya putro dhitejasvi Viharan balakor bakai
Viharan balakor bakai
Ragnatam prapitam tatam
Ragnatam prapitam tatam
Sutra tatredam abravi
Sutra tatredam abravi
Tasya putro dhitejasvi
Tasya putro dhitejasvi
Viharan balakor bakai
Viharan balakor bakai
Rajyanam prapitam tatam
Rajyanam prapitam tatam Shrutva tatredam abravi
Tasya putro dhitejasvi Viharan balakor bakai Ragyagham prapitam tatam Shrutva tatredam abravit Tasya
His
The sages
Putraha
Son Ati, extremely. Tejasvi, powerful. Viharan,
while playing.
Balakaha,
with boys.
Arbakai,
who were all childish.
Ragya,
by the king.
Agham,
distress.
Prapitam,
made to have.
Tatam,
the father.
Shutva,
by hearing.
Tatra,
then and there.
Idam,
this.
Abravit,
spoke.
Translation. The sage had a son who was very powerful, being a Brahmin's son. While he was playing with inexperienced boys, he heard of his father's distress, which was occasioned by the king. Then and there the boys spoke as follows. Please repeat. The sage had a son, who was very powerful,
being a Brahmin's son.
While he was playing with inexperienced boys,
He heard of his father's distress,
which was occasioned by the king.
Then and there,
the boy spoke as follows.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
Due to Maharaj Parikshit's good government, even a boy of tender age who is playing with other inexperienced boys could become as powerful as a qualified Brahmin. This boy was known as Sringi, and he achieved good training in Brahmacharya by his father, so that he could be as powerful as a Brahmin, even at that age. But because the age of Kali was seeking an opportunity to spoil the cultural heritage of the four orders of life, the inexperienced boy gave a chance for the age of Kali to enter the field of Vedic culture. Hatred of the lower orders of life began from this Brahmin boy under the influence of Kali, and thus cultural life began to dwindle day after day. The first victim of Brahminical injustice was Maharaj Parikshit. And thus the protection given by the king against the onslaught of Kali was slackened. Gurave Gura Chandraya Radhikayai Tadalaye Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Namaha. So, here in this section of the Bhagavatam, we're hearing something about this boy, Sringi, and a very terrible mistake that he made. Sringi was a son of Samika Rishi, a very qualified Rishi, and the boy was also a very good boy, very powerful Brahmin, due to the training his father had given him. But Srila Prabhupada notes here in the very beginning, due to Maharaj Parikshit's good government, even a boy of tender age who is playing with other inexperienced boys could become as powerful as a qualified Brahmin. So it's by the mercy of Maharaj Parikshit. According to our Vaishnava understanding, who do we consider to be more important, Maharaj Parikshit or Sringi? Maharaj Parikshit. We never speak about Sringi.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Shambhu.
And even between Shamukha Rishi and Maharaj Parikshit, how many devotees speak about Shamukha Rishi? How famous is he in our Gaudiya literature? Not at all. But Rupa Goswami in his Padyavali, he elaborates on the Navavidhi Bhakti, the nine processes of devotional service, and he speaks about Shravanam first, and he says the example of someone who achieved perfection through hearing is Maharaj Parikshit, and Samaka Rishi is not mentioned in that list of great personalities. So we focus on Maharaj Parikshit. There's a very important point here, and that is that we respect the Vaishnavas more than the Brahmins. And the Vaishnavas, is again and again described, were automatically Brahmins. Sringi began the disqualification of the Brahmins. And this is described in different places in Vedic literature. In the Padma Purana, it's described, Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishaha Sudra Papaparayanaha Nijachar Vihyanaschar Bhavishyanti kalo yuge vipraveda vihinascha pratigraha parayanaha achanta kamina krura bhavishyanti kalo yuge vedananda karaschaiva drutta chorja karastata vidava sangalubdascha bhavishyanti kalo dvijaha vrityartam brahmana kichit mahakapata dharminaha Raktam bhara bhavishyanti jatila smasuradinaha kalo yugi bhavishyanti brahmana sudradharminaha. Again and again and again in these verses, the word bhavishyanti is coming. Bhavishyanti means in the future will come. Bhavishyanti kalo yuge. In Kali Yuga, this is what's going to happen. In Kali Yuga, all four varnas are devoid of proper character. None of the four varnas have proper character in Kali Yuga, and they're all addicted to sin. The Brahmins are devoid of Vedic knowledge, and they're not performing sacrifice. Sometimes you may go to Calcutta or any big city today in India, and sometimes you walk past some shop, Hare Krishna, and you see they're killing chickens. Or they're cutting goat meat. And you'll see the person is doing it has a Brahmin thread on. They're coming from a Brahmin family, but they're doing such an abominable activity. But still they're very proud. I'm a Brahmin. They're thinking they're Brahmin simply by their birth. But they're not Brahmins by their qualification. We can tell who's a Brahmin, because a Brahmin is someone who behaves as a Brahmin. Even they may be dvija, Dui Janma, they may be second born, they may have Gayatri Mantra, but we don't care just as someone is second born. Maru Mangal in Krishna Bhavanamrita, He speaks about how the birds are also, the cowherd boy is teasing Madhav Mangal. They say, yes, the birds are also dvija. The first birth, the egg comes out of the bird, out of their mother. And then the second birth, they break out from the egg. So who cares? You're just dvija. But we care to see how you're behaving. And a Brahmin is someone who says, yajan, tatan, dhanapati graha. The first thing is that he does yajna. Yajna vai Vishnu. That's a Brahmin. Someone who worships the Lord. And that's why we give them so much respect. Because they're close to the Lord. Dikshashti chit pranati bishcha bhajantam isham. Someone who's bhajantam isha, worshipping the Lord, and is dikshashti, who has diksha. Rupa Goswami says we should offer obeisances to them. Yajan, yajan. They perform yajna. And they teach other people how to perform yajna. Yajan, yajan. Patan, patan. They read the Bhagavatam, they read Vedic literatures, and they teach Vedic literatures. Patan patan, dhana patigraha. Because they're doing those things, they're qualified to receive charity. And patigraha, they're qualified to give charity. So Pama Purana says that in Kali Yuga, the so-called Brahmins are giving up the five sacrifices recommended in the Vedas, and they're giving up all their brahminical behavior and consciousness, and they engage in inferior activities. As we mentioned, they're doing abominable things. They collect charity to satisfy their unlimited appetite for sense enjoyment. The Brahmins of Kali Yuga are characterized by the qualities of lust and cruelty. They're unholy in their deed and thought. They take pleasure in envy and malice. These professional thieves, that's their real position, they're professional thieves. They blaspheme the Vedas. They drink liquor and exploit women for sex. They take great pleasure in adultery and fornication. They accept extremely sinful means of maintaining their lives. And they pose themselves as swamis. They dress in red cloth and they wear long hair and beards. In this way, the wretched so-called Brahmins of Kali Yuga accept the dharma of sudras. That is, they become fourth-class men. I was having a conversation with Sri Vatsa Goswami some years ago in Vrindavan. And he's a Goswami of Radharaman Mandir, a descendant of one of the disciples of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And Srila Prabhupada was very respectful to those Goswamis. Some of them were very close friends of his. Anyway, Srivatsa Goswami, who knows so much about Vrindavan, he told me that, I forget what he said, but there's so many thousands of crores of rupees, huge amounts of money in the banks in Vrindavan. And he said that all that money, though, is in the hands of the Swamis and the Mahants. The Brahmins don't hardly have it. The local people don't have it. It's all the religious people, the so-called Brahmins. The simple Brahmins don't have that thing. So similarly, in the Agni Purana, it's described, Rakshasya kalamasricha kala brahmana yoni su utpana brahmana kule badante shutayan prishan. Those persons who are rakshasas in previous ages, they've taken birth in Kali Yuga as Brahmins to torment the physically weak, saintly persons who are engaged in the culture of hearing about the Lord. So these personalities are Brahmins in name only. And we have to understand what is the difference between Brahmins and Vaishnavas. There is one great lineage of Brahmins which began with Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, his son was Palashya Muni. Palashya Muni was a very great Pakka Brahmin. Palashya Muni, his son was the sage Vishravas. And the sage Vishravas, his son was another great Brahmin, very powerful Brahmin. This was in Treta Yuga. And that Brahmin's name was Ravan. He was such a powerful Brahmin, so learned in all the Vedas and Vedangas. That the demigods, sometimes when they were doing yajna, they would invite Ravan to chant the mantras because he was Pakka. He knew how to chant so nicely. It's described once that Ravan was doing Jagya, and he was chanting so nicely that Agni became so enchanted by his prayers. He said, oh, I've got to personally go there and bless them, bless him. And Lord Brahma, when he heard about that, he said, hey, Agni, don't do it. Don't go there. And Agni said, but his swara, his pronunciation is perfect. I'm so pleased by this. I have to go. He's doing such a wonderful installation of the fire. So Brahma said, okay, you can go, but don't take your wife. Agni replied to him. He said, what do you mean, don't take my wife? I don't go anywhere without my wife. I'm a very first-class Brahmin. Brahmin, his wife is always accompanied by him. I have to take her. Brahma said, okay. You asked for it, so you go ahead and do your thing. So he went there, and Ravan was circumambulating the fire with closed hands, with folded hands, chanting mantras. And Agni came and said, hey, Ravan, I'm here, and I want to give you a blessing. You've been chanting such good mantras. Ravan looked up and he saw Agni, and then he saw Agni's wife, whose name is Swaha. And he said, wow, Swaha is the flame of the fire. That's why she's Swaha, and the Brahmins, when they offer oblations in the fire, they chant Swaha to offer to that tongue of the fire. She's part of Agni's body. So when Ravan saw her, whoa, she's a really beautiful girl. And he ran over and he picked her up and started taking her away. And the Brahmins who were there helping him with the jagya, they said, hey, what are you doing? You're going to spoil the fire jagya? And Ravan said, who cares about the fire jagya? We got the woman. So he was a Pakka Brahmin by some consideration. But he was a demon. He got the mercy of Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva has two types of mercy, Sakapata Kripa, Nishkapata Kripa. He got the Sakapata Kripa, the mercy with cheating, because he wasn't told anything about the glories of Lord Ramachandra. He only got a very big golden palace, and that was it. And it's described as a local story. Prabhupada tells us too, in one lecture we found, it's a local story from Orissa. There's a number of places in Orissa in connection with Lord Shiva and Ravan and Lord Ramachandra. Part of Mount Kailash is said to be in Orissa, which fell from the mountain when Ravan had picked it up. I haven't heard that. And there was a story in the Ramayana that Ravan, once he went to pick up Kailash, and he picked up the mountain and started moving, and then Lord Shiva pushed his toe down. And it crushed his arms, and he screamed, and he made this loud sound, and that sound is the meaning of Ravan. That's why he has that name, Ravan, because his arms were pinned down. But when they say that when he picked up Mount Kailash, part of it fell off and landed. There's also another mountain there too, which Hanuman, they say, put down, and that's the Gandhamadana mountain. And there's a very special deity there of, his name, the cat in Sringadev. That's another story. That's in Western Orissa. An interesting place. Cat in Sringadev. We wrote some article about him, some pictures in our Bindu magazine. I'll give Prabhuji today if you want to see that. But anyway, so Lord Shiva, he was married to Parvati. And he's a good husband. Actually, in India, all the ladies, every Monday, they do puja for Lord Shiva. All the unmarried girls. It's traditional because they want to get a good husband. But who's a good husband? How is Lord Shiva a good husband? He has no job. He has no house. He has no education. He doesn't even have any clothes. He's Digambar, going around naked. But he's considered to be the greatest husband, the ideal husband, because he's a devotee. So anyway, Parvati married him, and it was a little tough living with Lord Shiva. There was no comforts for him living underneath a tree. And Parvati, one day, she saw how Sachidevi, the wife of Indra, had a fantastic palace. And all the wives of demigods, they had such wonderful palaces. And she told her husband, my dear Prabhu, could we also have a nice place to stay, a nice house? And Lord Shiva, who's a good husband, he said, yes, dear, whatever you say, dear, right away. So he called for Vishvakarma. And Vishvakarma made a fantastic palace out of gold for Lord Shiva. Very, very nice. So Lord Shiva was happy. Parvati was very, very happy, you can imagine. And so then came the time for the Griha Pravesha, right, to purify the house, chant some mantras, and move in. They picked out an auspicious muhurta, good time to move in. And then they had to have someone, some Brahmin, do the puja. So Lord Shiva was considering who to do, and he was thinking maybe Markandeya Rishi, who was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. Lord Markandeya Rishi, he got the real mercy of Shiva. He prays in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, Varam me kam vane tapi purnat kama bivarshanat bhagavat yat chitim bhaktim tat parishitatatvai. My dear Lord Shiva, please give me Krishna prema, and also give me love for you. He got the niskapata kripa, the real mercy of Lord Shiva. But Parvati, she said, no, don't call him. You should call for Ravan. Ravan's a very first-class Brahmin, and he's your disciple also. So Lord Shiva said, yes, dear, whatever your suggestion is. And he's a henpecked husband. So he called for Ravan, and Ravan came, did the puja, very, very nice, Griha Pravesh ceremony. And then Lord Shiva asked him, so now I have to give you some guru dakshina, for some donation for doing this ceremony. What would you like? And Ravan said, well, this house is really nice. I'd like this house. And Lord Shiva, who's so detached because he's a premi bhakti, said, tadastu, so be it. So right in front of Parvati, he gave that house away to her. And that's the house, the palace that Lord Shiva was living in Lanka. So who really got the mercy of Lord Shiva? It looks like Ravan really got a lot of mercy, because he was benedicted in this way. He was given this fantastic palace, whereas Markandeya Rishi didn't have anything. He was living for 7 kulpas. He didn't even have a proper hut. Once his disciples came to him and they wanted to make a house for him to live in, he said, no, I'm not going to live that long. I have a short life. Life's very short. He's living for 7 kulpas. But he had the real mercy of Lord Shiva. Mm-hmm. So one may be a Brahmin, but much, much higher than being a Brahmin is being a Vaishnava. And a Brahmin naturally has the qualities. A Vaishnava naturally has the qualities of a Brahmin. Mm-hmm. It's described by Lord Brahma in the Srishti Kanda, chapter 43, text 321 to 322 of the Padma Purana. Such chotriya kule jato akriyo naiva pujita asat asat krishtra kule pujo vyasa vaibhandukayita chatranam chatriyanam kule jato vishamitro stimatsamaha vishaputro vishishtascha anye siddha dvijatrayaha yasya tasya kule jato gunavaneva targunai saksha brahmanyo vipra pujiya prayatnataha. Brahma said, if someone is born in a family of Brahmins, and that family, the family of Brahmins, they're qualified because they're absorbed in hearing divine sound. That's the qualification of a Brahmin. But this person is born in such a family, if they have bad character and bad behavior, they should not be worshipped as a Brahmin. On the other hand, Vyasadeva and Vaibhandaka Muni, they were born in unclean circumstances. Parashara Muni and Satyavati, she's a fisherman's daughter. Actually, she's the daughter of a fish. It's a long story you may know in Mahabharata. They begot Srila Vyasadeva. There was no proper garbhara and sanskara that we know of. And moreover, his mother was a fisherman's daughter, born from a fish. But they're worshipable. In the same way, Vishwamitra Muni was born as a Kshatriya. But he became equal, Lord Brahma said, to me by his qualities and activities. Vasishtha was born as the son of a prostitute. And many other great souls who manifested the qualities of first-class Brahmins also took place, birth, in similar humble circumstances. But they're also called perfect. The place where one takes birth is of no importance in determining whether one is a Brahmin. Those who have the qualities of Brahmins are recognized everywhere as Brahmins. And those who have such qualities are worshipped by everyone. Therefore, the Bhagavatam says, yasya ya lakshanam pumso proktam pumsavana viranjakam yadanyat tripadishita tataniva vinyardishit. That we should judge someone not by their birth, but by their qualities. Sridhar Swami, in his Bhavartha Deepika commentary, he comments on this verse, Yashriya Lakshanam Proktam, from the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam. He says, Samadhi Bhireva Brahmanadi Vyavaharo Mukhyana Jatimatrat Yad Yadi Anyatra Vanantare Pi Drishyeta Tat Vanashtaram Tenaiva Lakshmana Nimittenaiva Arnena Vinirdishet natu jatinam ittenitraha. The qualities of a Brahman, he says, beginning with peacefulness and other qualities, samodhamotapasocham, like that, represent the chief characteristics or principal behavior of a Brahman. On the other hand, birth is no qualification for brahminical status. If one is seen to take birth in another varna but has the qualifications of a Brahman, his birth should be disregarded and he should be accepted as a Brahman. One who is born as a Brahman may be accepted as a Brahman if he has the qualifications, but otherwise he should not be. This is Vedic literature. Again and again and again it's described. There's a very nice verse in this regard in the Vajra Suchika Upanishad, which was a verse very dear to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. He used to quote this very often. Tahi jati brahmana itti chena tatcha jantyantara jantasu aneka jati sambhava maharshayo bahava santi rishya shringo mrigaha koshika kushat jambuko jambukat valmiko valmikat vyasa kaivarta kanyanam sisas pristat gotama vasishta urvashyam Agastya kalase jata itti sutatvat. Ete sham jata vinapriage jnana pratipadita rishyo bahava shanti tasmana jati brahmana itti. The next point described in this place in the Vrajra Suchika Upanishad is if someone becomes a Brahman by birth. And the answer said there is no. And it's said that many great souls have taken birth from mixed ancestry. These are some of the greatest rishis of all time. The sage, known as Sringa, he took birth from a deer. And the sage Kaushika was born from Kusha grass. Jambuka Muni, Jambuka Rishi, was raised by a jackal. Valmiki Muni was born from an anthill. He was a dacoit before. And then he took birth again from an anthill. Vyasadeva was born from a fisherman's daughter. The sage Gotama was born from a rabbit. Vasishtha Muni was born from the dancing girl Urvasi. Agastya took birth from a pot in which semen was stored. And he says, in this way, there are many examples of great saints who did not know what circumstances they took birth. Therefore, birth does not make one a Brahman. So in the Chandogya Upanishad, there's a nice story about one young boy who approached Gotama Rishi and asked him, he said, Maharaj, please give me initiation. And Gotama Rishi then asked him, what's your gotra? What's your line? What's your lineage? Who's your mother and father? And that boy said, I don't know. I'll go ask my mother. So he went and asked his mother, and his mother said, well, actually, to tell you the truth, when I was a young girl, I slept with a lot of men. I was with so many different men, and I don't know who your father is. In Vedic culture, that's very bad. That's very, very bad, huh? So that young boy, he went back to Gotama Rishi, and he told him, he said, I don't know who my father was. My mother, she slept with so many different men. I'm not sure who my father was. Gotama was very impressed with him. He said, you speak the truth. Therefore, you must be a Brahman. No one but a Brahman could speak such an unpalatable truth. So he told him, I accept you as my disciple. Your name henceforth will be known as Satyakam. That person who always tells the truth. So we should be interested in qualities. not simply in birth. This is also nicely described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur. He speaks about the same point, about trying to judge someone by their birth. It's not something that we should do. We can sing these verses. Kule Vaishnava Jamma Keni Nahi Kapi Sarvatma Sarva Shastra Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Tara Tramana Jovana Hari Da Rama Hari Dola Bhagi Kira Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Hare Krishna This is spoken by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said, Jete Kuli Vaishnava Janma Keni Nahi. You should never judge a Vaishnav by his birth. A Vaishnav may take birth in any family, but the tathi sarvottama, you should know he's the topmost person. Sarva shastri kohed, all the shastras describe this. Ehitara pramana, the living evidence of this is the yavana, Haridas Thakur. He's born in a Muslim family, but he was the greatest devotee. And he says that Brahma Adi Dolava Dekila Prakash, the realizations that Haridas Thakur had are rarely obtained even by great personalities like Lord Brahma, who actually was Haridas Thakur. And it's an interesting point that he's making there, because as Lord Brahma, he didn't have those realizations. But when he came as Haridas Thakur, he became very humble and he served Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's born in a Muslim family. Then he had realizations even greater than in his birth as Lord Brahma. So Mahaprabhu says, Vista Vaishnava Jati Bhuti Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Papista Vaishnava Jati. He says that only a wretched sinner will judge a Vaishnav by their birth. Because a Vaishnav, he shouldn't be judged by his birth, by his caste, his race, or nationality. And someone who does that, then janma janma adama jonita dubi mori, they'll take birth again and again in lower species of life. Chati kula kriya dami kichu nahi kore Madhanya hati kriya dami Krishna hare Chati kula kriya dami kichu nahi kore High birth, your high caste, your fruitive activities and things, they're all useless if you want to get Krishna bhakti. Only intense desire to serve Krishna can give that. And very nice verses. Was the high family that Prahlad Maharaj was born in. His father was a demon, Hiranyakashipu. What was the high birth of Hanuman? What high gotra does he belong to? He's a monkey. Similarly, Haridas Thakur was born in a low family. Jatayu, he was born as a vulture, means non-vegetarian. Prabhupada says in one letter, he says that Garuda is a non-vegetarian Vaishnava. He's born as a bird. But Krishna accepted him as his personal carrier. So he's such a great personality. Who do we give more respect to, Ravan or Hanuman?
Hanuman.
Hanuman. He's born in a monkey family. Ravan was a grandson of Palashya Muni. Very great personality. He's a great-grandson of Lord Brahma. But he's a demon. So we want to see by someone's qualities. Yashiga lakshanam proktam. We want to see the qualities that they have, not by their birth. There's a story in this regard also, a very nice story, that once Ramanujacharya was taking part in a festival in Sri Rangam. The deity was there of Lord Ranganath, the Utsav Vigraha of Ranganath had come out on the street, in the palanquin. And all thousands of people had come out in the streets to worship the Lord. And then suddenly, the devotees, they saw some strange fellow. He was a big, burly, muscular man. And he was walking with a chamra in one hand and an umbrella in the other hand. And with the umbrella, he was holding it over the head of a very beautiful girl. And in the other hand, he was fanning her. And he was completely oblivious to the Lord and his presence there. He was worshiping this beautiful girl in the presence of all the devotees and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Ramanuja, when he saw that, he felt very sorry for that man. And he told one of his disciples, "You call for him. I want to speak with him." And he went there and brought that man over. And Ramanuja said, "What's your name? What is your caste? What are you doing? Don't you feel embarrassed worshiping this girl like this in front of the Supreme Lord?" And that man was a very humble man. He said, "My name is Donardas, and I'm a very powerful wrestler. And my family, they come from Sudra caste, wrestlers. And this girl, this is my wife, and she's so beautiful. She's the most beautiful creature I've ever seen. So I'm worshiping her. What's the harm in that?" Ramanuja felt very bad. Such a shameless, lusty fellow. Worshipping his wife there in front of the Lord. And Ramanuja told him, he said, "Well, if I can show you someone more beautiful, would you like to see that?" "Yes." So Ramanuja took him inside of the temple. And he had darshan of the deity of Lord Ranganath, who's lying down inside, very beautiful deity. And Donardas, by the mercy of Ramanuja and his association, by the mercy of the Lord, he had a change of heart. And he became a devotee. He became one of the primary devotees, disciples of Ramanujacharya. Even though he came from a Brahmin family, Ramanuja, when he was going to take his bath, he would lean on the arm of Donardas. When he was going there before the bath, and even after taking his bath, again, he would put his arm on Donardas's hand, on Donardas's arm, and walk back. So Ramanuja had a number of disciples, and a lot of them, they were very staunch brahmacharis, and Brahmin, coming from a Brahmin family. And when they saw this, they became disturbed. "We have all respect for Guru Maharaj. He's very special, but this is not right. What he's doing is incorrect. He's giving all this respect to this sudra, Donardas. In fact, he's giving more respect to this sudra than he's giving to us. This is not good. People will criticize Guru Maharaj because he's not following the shastra properly." So Ramanuja, he observed their mentality. He didn't say anything. And early the next morning, before any of them had risen, woke up in the morning, maybe 3 in the morning or something, Ramanuja went to the place where all those brahmachari disciples had hung up their dhotis to dry the night before. He washed them every night and they hung them up to dry. And Ramanuja tore a small strip, maybe the size of a copan, off each one of those dhotis. He didn't say anything. And the next morning, when those brahmachari brahmins woke up and they went out to put on their dhotis, "Hey, what happened? Some badmash, some rascal, tore my dhoti," and they started quarreling among themselves. "You did this, admit it." "No, I didn't do it. You must have done this to me." And they started quarreling and fighting amongst themselves. Finally, Ramanuja had to come and tell them, "Hey, diddy, chill out. Stop this." So then later on in the day, Ramanuja, he called for those same disciples. Those disciples are coming from a Brahmin family. And he told them, he said, "You know, I've been thinking for some time about this disciple of mine, Donardas. And, you know, I think that he's a little too materially attached. You know, I'm thinking like that." And the disciples said, yes, Guru Maharaj, we also noticed that. He's not a very qualified person. And Ramanuja just said, "Yes, we should expose him for his real situation. The disciples said, yes, Gurudev, very good. So Ramanuja said, so I have a plan. What you should do, I'll call for Dhanardas. You go and ask him to come. But we'll ask him to come at the time when his wife is taking rest. So you ask him to come, tell him that I want to speak with him. And then after he leaves, you go into his place very quietly and steal the jewelry off his sleeping wife's body. And then we'll see his position when he finds out what's going on. The disciples said, yes, Guru Maharaj, very good plan. Now we'll be able to expose this rascal who's trying to act like he's some big person. So they went and they called for Dhanardas. Dhanardas, oh yes, Guru Maharaj wants to speak to me. Jumped up and went to see him. And meanwhile, his wife was taking rest. And so those Brahmins came very quietly. And they snuck into the room there. And his wife was laying on her side, sleeping. So very carefully, very gently, they took her earrings off, took off her bangles. From one hand, they took off the Nupura, golden bracelets, because her husband had given her so much jewelry. He's a very attached householder. They took all that jewelry from one side, and then they were going to take the other jewelry from the other side. And at that time, she rolled over in her sleep, and they became frightened. Oh, she's going to wake up and catch us doing this. So they ran away with that jewelry. So Dhanardas was speaking with Ramanuja for a little while, and then he told him, so okay, I'm finished, now you can go back. So Dhanardas came back to see his wife. And he came in, and she woke up and saw her husband, oh, my dear Prabhu, and offered obeisances to him. And Dhanardas is looking at her. He said, you're decorated in a very strange way today. You only have earrings on one side. You only have bracelets on one side. You only have Nupura on one side, ankle bracelets. Why are you decorated like this? And she said, oh, my dear husband, while you were gone to see Gurudev, some of our godbrothers, they came, and I guess they needed some money very badly. They were very poor. So they, while I was sleeping, they took my jewelry off one side. And then when I saw that they these Brahmins, they needed this wealth, I tried to roll over in my sleep so that they could take the jewelry from the other side. When Dhanardas heard this, he became furious. And he started shouting at her, nonsense woman, what did you do? You're too materially attached. And that's why you weren't more expert. You could have rolled over in a more expert way so they could have taken the other jewelry also. Why are you so attached to this jewelry? That was his response. And his wife, she hung her head and she said, oh, Prabhu, I'm very sorry. Don't do like this again. If these Brahmins want to come again, we should give them everything. Whatever they want, it doesn't belong to us. Everything belongs to Gurudev. So while this conversation was going on, Ramanuja, he had told those Brahmin disciples, now you go back by the window and listen what's going to happen when Dhanardas discovers this. So they listened to the conversation and then went back to report to Ramanuja. And Ramanuja listened to their description. And then he asked him, he said, so now tell me, who acted like more like a real Brahmin? All of you this morning when that small strip of cloth was torn off your dhotis, and you all became so furious and started quarreling among yourselves, or Dhanardas, who so much, great amount of wealth was taken from his wife while she was sleeping. Who was more detached? Who was more brahminical? And those very proud Brahmin, Brahmachari, the disciples, they hung their heads down. They said, Guru Maharaj, Dhanardas, he was more qualified. So this movement, Srila Prabhupada's movement, probably used to say this movement is for making Brahmins. Once one devotee in Hawaii came to Srila Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, I've been analyzing my position according to Vanashram, and I realize I'm a Kshatriya, and I'd like you to please give me some personal instructions like that. And Prabhupada said, I have no instructions for you. He said, we're here to make Brahmins. We have no interest in this thing. And the devotee was disappointed. And later on, Srila Prabhupada, seeing, he said the devotees are not qualified. He wanted some vanashram system. But what kind of vanashram system did he want? He didn't want us to become like smarta Brahmins and start thinking that I'm a Brahmin, I have second initiation. He's just a bhakta, second-class devotee. Bhakta Bill. Not very high. You should get initiated, then people give you more respect. But even if you get initiated, they won't give some. You should get a paita, a Brahmin thread. You get second initiation. Then they'll give you the Mahaprasadam. And even better than that is if you get a stick, a danda, then they'll give you even more respect.
And you get the mantle, please.
So some people, they're thinking like this. But that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's purpose. Rupa Goswami describes anyabhilasika shunyam, jnana karmadi anabritam, anukulyena krishnanu silanam bhakti uttami. He describes what is real bhakti, what is pure bhakti. Anyabhilasita shunya. Anyabhilas, your other nonsense behavior and desires should be shunya, zero. And then he says, jnana karma adi anabritam. Jnana, karma, etc. should not cover bhakti. And Jiva Goswami, in his commentary in this verse, he raises a question. Why is the word anabritam used? Why not shunyatam? No jnana, no karma, etc. We want pure bhakti. He says, because some jnana and some karma can be useful. He says there's three types of jnana, for example. Tatparartha jnana, Tvamparartha jnana, and Jiva Brahma Aikya jnana. Knowledge about the Lord, knowledge about ourself as a spirit soul, and knowledge of the oneness of the Lord and the Jiva. He said the first two are beneficial for bhakti. The third, we don't appreciate. We don't cultivate that. But the first two may be good for bhakti. Karma, acting according to vanashram. This is what Jiva Goswami says karma means there. May sometimes be beneficial for bhakti. It may be helpful. Everyone should be reside in an ashram. We should have an ashram of some kind. Because if you don't have an ashram, that place where ashraya, you're taking shelter, then where are you at? That ashram is beneficial for us for spiritual life. We may be a brahmachari, we may be a grihastha, we may be a vanaprastha, we may be a sannyasi. It doesn't matter. We don't think that one is better than the other. Mahapu said, Maham varni na chagrihapatino vanaishto yutirva. I'm not a brahman. I'm not a sannyasi or a grihastha, this or that. I'm a devotee. Gopi bhartahu padakamalayor dasa dasa nudasaha. But we accept those things to develop bhakti. So Jiva Goswami says, how then may they cover bhakti? He says they may cover bhakti in one of two ways. Number one, someone may think it's the goal. The goal is to become a Brahmin and to learn how to bend my fingers and do all these mudras and chant mantras and be very expert. That's the goal. In this Vedic culture, I'm going to dress like this, and I'm going to learn very expert mridanga and this thing and that thing. But they're taking all the externals, but they're neglecting the internal thing. They're thinking the goal is all this external look. So that's covering bhakti. They're thinking the goal is not bhakti. The goal is to become a Brahmin. The goal is to become learned in Shastra. The goal is to become a great pujari. The goal is this thing or that thing. Something other than bhakti. So that's covering bhakti. The second way that this vanashram and other things may cover bhakti is that someone may think, if I don't do this, I can't get bhakti. If I don't act like a Brahmin, I can't get bhakti. But Jatayu wasn't acting like a Brahmin. Garuda wasn't acting like a Brahmin. They're more than Brahmins because they were devotees. They were Vaishnavas. We only need to take shelter of the holy name, and that will give everything. We take shelter of vanashram because it will help us to get bhakti, but not because it's required. There are three types of sadhaks Baladi Vidyabhushan describes in his commentary on Vedanta Sutra. The nirapeksha, swanishita, Parinishita and Nirapeksha. The Swanishita Sadhak is someone who thinks, I have to follow Vanashram. If I don't follow Vanashram, I'll fall down. You don't have to. You're not going to fall down if you follow bhakti properly. The Parinishita Sadhak is better. He says, no, I accept Vanashram because it will help me. Because I might fall down. It's better that I act according to my varna. I'm not in that transcendental position yet. So I'll act according to varna and ashram, and it will help me. And the nirapeksha is a liberated soul. He may act according to vanashram, he may not act according to vanashram. It doesn't matter. So there's three types of sadhaks are there. We have to be sadagrahi Vaishnavas and see the essence of what our acharyas came to give, which is Krishna bhakti. We're not interested in all these external things. It's nice. Vedic culture is very nice. The ragas are very nice. The talls are very nice. the literature is very wonderful, the language is very wonderful, the customs and behavior, the etiquette, the way the ladies behave, the way the men behave, these are all very wonderful types of etiquette. But if we put those things before bhakti, then they cover bhakti, and we'll miss the boat. We may be a very, very pukka brahman, but we may not be a devotee. So it becomes ironic sometimes when devotees in ISKCON who are coming from Yavana Malecha backgrounds, we start acting like smarta brahmins and insisting that new people follow this rule or that rule, and that women should shut up and stand in the back because that's the way they do in this particular culture, which is a controversial thing anyway, because actually in Vedic culture there's so many examples of ladies giving class. It's described that Lakshmi Devi, sometimes she speaks the Bhagavatam to Lord Narayan, and he listens to her. She's giving Bhagavatam class. Parvati sometimes is giving Bhagavatam class to Lord Shiva. It's described in the Keno Upanishad that once Lord Vishnu appeared as a yaksha, and the demigods couldn't figure out who he was. So they came to see him, and one by one he humbled them. Agni Dev came before him. He said, "Who are you?" "I'm Agni. What can you do?" "I can burn anything. Can you burn this piece of straw?" "Yes." But he couldn't, because Lord Vishnu wouldn't allow him. Agni, then Vayu came. "Who are you?" "I'm Vayu. What can you do?" "I can blow anything. Can you move that piece of straw just an inch?" He started blowing. He couldn't do it. And then they went back and reported to Indra. "We don't know who this yaksha is. Very strange person." So then Indra came to check it out. Indra was the first one who inquired. The other two didn't ask any questions. Indra, this point is made by Srila Madhvacharya in his commentary on this part of Keno Upanishad. So he was superior to Agni and Vayu, and that's why Indra became the chief of the demigods. But Lord Vishnu saw he's not qualified. He was there. It was Vishnu, Shiva, and Parvati. The three of them were together there. So Vishnu disappeared and took Lord Shiva with him. And he left Parvati because he thought this Indra is a very lusty fellow. Parvati is the right person to preach to him. Parvati is like Miss Universe, extremely beautiful. Indra will be very interested in hearing from her. And she spoke transcendental knowledge to the King of Heaven, Indra. So that's our Vedic culture. That's our Vedic tradition. And personalities are there like Ganga Mata, Goswamini, and Janava Mata, who were in ladies' bodies, but they gave initiation. Ganga Mata, Goswamini gave initiation to the King of Puri. Sometimes people say, well, she's in a different kind of line, we don't follow that. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati put her appearance day on our Vaishnava calendar. He considered her to be worshipable and respectful. So we observe this. So we should understand, what was Srila Prabhupada's movement? Srila Prabhupada didn't come to establish Vanashram. He didn't come to give Vaishnava culture. He came to give Krishna Bhakti. And if they can follow that, they can learn the Vaishnava culture, very nice, because it's the most glorious culture in the world. It's very high class, it's very wonderful. But not everybody can do it. If you study, it's a little controversial, not so well known to them, you may know, but about half of the early devotees in 26 Second Avenue were homosexual. And Prabhupada knew about it. And they weren't always following properly. But Prabhupada gave them mercy and helped them, uplifted them. He wasn't insisting on this. Allen Ginsberg was openly speaking to Prabhupada about homosexuality. But Prabhupada still was kind to him and encouraged him. George Harrison, Prabhupada considered him to be like his disciple, but George Harrison wasn't following all the regulated principles. He wasn't behaving properly. Prabhupada, what was his purpose? We should understand. It wasn't just to be the International Society for Four Regulated Principles. It was the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And devotees should cultivate that. And to do that thing, we should follow four regulated principles. In the beginning of the Upadeshamrita, which is the Upadeshamrita, the nectar, the essence of instructions, Rupa Goswami says, Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Adhara Pasta Vegam, Itam Vegam Yoga Sahita Dira, Sarvamapi Mam Pratidim Sashishyat. Very interesting. That verse was not written by Rupa Goswami. It was written, it's not in the Yoga Sutras. That in one of the verses in Upadeshamrita also. And it doesn't speak anything about bhakti. In fact, in the commentaries by Mukunda Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they say the verse doesn't speak about bhakti at all. Because there's some people who may be controlling their senses like all that, but they're not devotees at all. Some mayavadis, They may be very pukka and controlling his senses, but they're not devotees. Bhaktivinoda says that these principles are not principles of bhakti, but he said these are the things which are the doorway to bhakti. Because if we, as we were mentioning last night, if we fall prey to these bad habits, then it becomes very hard to focus on the artha, the goal. Because these other things are anarthas, which distract us. It's very difficult if you don't control your sex organs, if you don't control your tongue, if you don't control your speech, if you eat any damn thing that you want, it's going to be very hard for you to be focused on bhakti. So Rupa Goswami begins his Upadeshamrita with those things. But we shouldn't misunderstand and think that they're the goal. If we think that they're the goal, then they're covering bhakti. Bhakti is swarat. Bhakti is independent. In his commentary on the Trinada Pisa Nichina verse, Srila Sanatana Goswami, he says that when it says, Kirtaniya Sadaharihi, he said it doesn't mean that chanting is dependent on being humble. If you think that I'm not going to be able to chant unless I'm humble, then that's covering bhakti. That's covering the holy name. You think, he calls it pramada namaparad, one of the 10 offenses of the holy name. To think that the holy name is not independent, it's dependent on something else. It's dependent on humility. He said, no. Even if you're a proud fellow, if you chant the holy name, your pride will go away. And that humility will come to you. At the same time, Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita says we should cultivate humility. Even before we get bhakti, we should cultivate it because it will help us get bhakti. An example can be given. I grew up on a farm in Illinois, in America. And we had a pump well, tea well they call those things. I don't know if they have those here in this country. So to get you could stand there and pump that thing all day long for 12 hours and wouldn't get one drop of water out of it. We used to call it prime the well. You had to pour some water in because there's a little cup inside the thing. When you pour the water in, it makes it go down deeper and then it gets to the water. So to get water out of the well, you had to put water into the well. So we cultivate humility in that sense because it will help us in our bhakti. And then the bhakti will give us real humility. But it's not that bhakti is dependent on humility, nor is bhakti dependent on vanashram. We should see bhakti is swarat. Bhakti is independent. And someone who's a devotee is the greatest person. And we should give the most respect to them. And in our society, we should have this kind of understanding. We like Vaishnava culture. Personally, that's why I live in India, why I ran away from America. I love the culture there. It's the most high-class, wonderful culture in the world. But the homosexuals and lesbians in San Francisco or in Oslo or whatever, they're not going to be able to follow all this culture. So does it mean we shouldn't preach to them? No, we should. Everyone can take to this movement. They may not be able to learn all the cultural nuances, but it's not absolutely required. Jatayu wasn't perfect in all of his Vedic culture. He was born in the body of a vulture. So we should see that bhakti is everything. And this Vaishnava culture is very nice, it's very fascinating. I like to play some ragas, quote some verses, read some things from literature. It's very fascinating, very nice culture. It's high class. But it's not that someone has to do that. As long as we give people the essence of things, that's the most important. Because bhakti is more important than this vanashram. And we see this from this verse in purport today in the Bhagavatam, that although Maharaj Parikshit, he's born in a lower Kshatriya family, he's greater than Sringi, the Brahmin, because he was he's a Vaishnava, because he was very tolerant, because he had devotion to Krishna, and Sringi didn't. And because Sringi acted in such a proud way and was insisting that their culture, as Prabhupada calls it in that purport, by that culture he was higher than Maharaj Parikshit, then he caused the downfall of everything. Because of him, Kali entered into this world. Kali wasn't able to enter before because of Maharaj Parikshit. So in the same way, in this movement, Kali won't be able to enter if we focus on bhakti and if we focus on the holy name and understand that that's the topmost thing. But if we start becoming like smarta Brahmins and insisting that people have to follow this rule and that rule, do this thing, and if you don't do that, you're low class, insisting that a Brahmin just because someone has second initiation, they're higher than someone else, or saying that because someone's initiated by this guru, I'm initiated by Gorgamanda Maharshi, I'm better than this other person. He was only initiated by Harikesh, and his guru left. He's not good. No. That person, they have mantra. They've gotten into cyclic succession. We should respect someone by their qualities. You may be a disciple of a big, big guru, but if you have rotten qualities, what's the value? Gandhi is described as Mahatma Gandhi. Everyone glorifies him. But his eldest son became a Muslim and a drunkard and a womanizer, and he died of venereal disease. So what's the value of being the son of a Mahatma if you're a low-class person? What's the value of being a disciple of a big guru? Therefore, Prabhupada says that two things come from the father's genitals, putra and mutra. Putra means son, the other is mutra. Mutra means urine. So we don't want to become like urine of our guru. We want to develop good qualities. It's not just that we're here like a religion to get initiation or to become a Brahmin. Now I'm better than everyone else. We want this and start thinking that Vanashram Dharma is everything. Bhakti is everything. Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Yoga Dana. Vrindavan Das Thakur says in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Bhakti is the greatest wealth. Everything else is insignificant. Okay? So we'll stop there. Grantarashimid Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Puji, you have some comment or question?
Yeah, you touched upon this point with Varnashram several times. And you emphasized preaching or sending this to others. Before Varnashram and Varnashram. And I've noticed also that the modes of nature, even when we live in a secluded place and we are
genetical
and like mode of goodness and things and nuts, then still because of our previous activities, then we fall back, and it seems to me that the only thing that can really shake us is that, you know, that sankirtan activity that can really shake, you know, all these all that bad influence that we've been that we've already. So but at the same time, we know we have to establish, we know this is the desire of the TBC, but also the previous acharyas. We know the desire, their desire to establish farm communities and become self-sufficient. And often it becomes a tendency to become a little slack in the preaching, because now we just live in a farm, and so we live secluded away. We don't see anyone around here, no one's suffering here, you know, so it's just that bad, smelly old city, you know. I mean, why do I have to bother with that? Because we are supposed to protect cows. And we have three cows. They give, you know, 2 liters of milk a week. And so we spend like 3 persons and all their energy. So could you please?
We have to understand Srila Prabhupada's purpose. Some people, they say, that Prabhupada said that Vanashram is 50% of my mission. With all respect, I have the folio upstairs. Show me where that's at from Prabhupada's words. You can't find it anywhere. Prabhupada, with respect, one senior devotee said that Prabhupada told him that privately. And so maybe Prabhupada did. I'm not calling him a liar. Prabhupada may have said that thing. But if it really was 50% of his mission, then why didn't Prabhupada say it again and again? If it's 50% of his mission. Rather, in his books, in the early things he says about Vanashram, he always criticizes it. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says, Eho Bhaya, Agi Kahar, this Vanashram is an external thing. We're not interested in it. So what is the necessity, what is the purpose, the utility of Vanashram? Everything is in connection with bhakti. If it will help us in our bhakti, and what is our bhakti? We're not, as you were alluding perhaps, we're not bhajananandis, we're ghostianandis. We want to please our acharyas by preaching, and that by doing that, we're going to get mercy. That's our real hope. And we use this vanashram thing because otherwise, it's going to be hard for me. If I need to be married, or if that's my natural situation, better to have a wife. And then your mind is peaceful, and you're not disturbed with things. But the real purpose is to please my guru, and I'm going to do that by preaching. And so we should see everything in connection with that. Hari Keshwar was so good. He used to always emphasize that. We may have farms. We should have farms. Very good. Prabhupada wanted that. But those farms should be there for preaching. In Hungary, we have that Krishna Valley. And it's one of the biggest preaching, it's probably the biggest preaching project in all of Hungary. Thousands of people come there for festivals, and they're so very, very interested. And the devotees, they're doing it in that mood. It's first class.
Travel all over Europe, and they have 150 devotees there that in America, and then they go out on Sunday.
Yeah. So we should see that thing. If we just try, I've seen devotees who try to do that. We're going to make our own clothes now, and we're going to make our own house, and we're going to grow our own food, and okay, there's 30 of us who's going to do this, and then a few months later, a couple of years later, there's only one or two left, and everybody else goes somewhere else. If that's our purpose, as some people think, if it's 50% of our purpose, sorry folks, we lost. We're defeated. And the Amish in America have done much better because they live without electricity. They live without cars. They live, at least a lot of them, live without money. That's a big thing. I'm really impressed with that, and I'd like to see that for preaching. I'd like to see our farm projects do these three things. If you can live without electricity, man, if you can live without cars and gasoline, if you can live without money, people are going to be really impressed. And they'll come. When I was a young boy, my parents took us to some Amish community once in Illinois. And I remember they have all these tourists going there. And they were, they have their pies and different things. They were selling. They were dealing with money, at least, at that level. And so many tourists are coming, and they're being preached to. And they're eager to be preached to. We want to know, what is it you guys do? People will come to us, like they're coming to Krishna Valley. Krishna Valley, they still use cars and some electricity and that. But they're going in that direction more. And it's fantastic preaching. So we should see everything in that regard. That was Prabhupada's desire, that we distribute books, that we preach to people, that we help them, and not just think about ourselves. And the farms are there for that purpose. And in that regard, my humble feeling is that when we make new temples and new buildings, the purpose is for preaching. Why don't we do them in an ecological way? Put some solar panels up there or something and generate our own electricity. Or if you have some cows, have some methane gas or whatever, you have some firewood, do something like that, and by that be preaching. Because there's places in India now, there's places all over the world, where people are coming to see that there's one university in South India that uses no electricity. They generate all their own electricity. And they're completely ecological. They compost all their waste and everything, and it's first class. And thousands of people are going there to see them. Well, why don't they do that with the Hare Krishnas? We can also do that thing. It's part of our philosophy. And if we do that, then they'll come and they'll want to take books and things. Because we need to also show them an alternative lifestyle. Because a lot of people, we may give them books. There's another point about this preaching thing. We may give them books and they cultivate them, but it's just too hard for them in Copenhagen. For people who are used to, like, all this, as you said yesterday, sex, drugs, and rock and roll and whatever like that. Okay, yeah, I like Hare Krishna. This is really cool and nice and stuff, but gee, my senses are really strong. Well, why don't you come to the farm for a while and practice, go through a bhakti program there or something. It's peaceful there. It's quiet. And you can see the cows. You can have nice prasad, and there's no prostitutes walking around in the streets. It's good. It's good for people like that, and we can train them. So my humble thought is that we should see everything in connection with preaching. Prabhupada said this preaching is the purpose of our movement. He wanted farm projects. But the farm projects he wanted, that they would raise cows and the milk would go to the restaurants in the cities and maintain the deities in the cities for our preaching. Because this is our battlefront. And sometimes devotees, they get older, they need some farming, or maybe they're just by nature, they're good at farming and that. That's great. Let them do that, but let's see everything in connection with preaching. Is that okay? Okay. So we'll stop there. Grandarashima Bhagavatam ki, Chilabhavad ki, Sanaveda Bhakta Vinda ki, Vacha Kapadarubhischa, Kripa Sindhu Vyabhacha, Paditanam Bhavadu, Vaishnavibhya, Namo Namaha.